Ornithology.
What a fine achievement for Cheltenham Town.
Hello and welcome to Ornithology, a podcast from the Robins Trust. My name's Jamie, I'm a board member at the Robins Trust. We came up with this podcast for Robins Trust members as a way of taking a little bit of a deep dive into the anatomy of our club and understanding the people involved and how they make the club work. If you're listening to this and you're not a Trust member, you can go to robinstrust.org/join and sign up for as little as £10 a year, allowing you to get access to all of the episodes in this series as they're released. This first episode, I thought we'd start at the top and speak to Paul Baker, representing the owners of the club. He is one of the four major shareholders, a group which also includes the Robins Trust. And I thought I'd speak to Paul, who's someone who's also been the chairman of the club board for a long time. He guided us into the Football League and got us established there. And speak to him about how the owners work as a group together between the significant owners and how they appoint the board, how much of a hands-on role they play with getting involved in the board's business. We were talking back when we were really struggling at the start of the 2023-24 season, before we had managed to score a goal. I think we only had 1 point. And this was prior to the departure of Wade Elliott and the arrival of Darrell Clarke. So while I tried to make this quite a broad discussion, some of it will be slightly dated by occurring in that period. I hope you find this interesting. I hope it'll let us all learn a little bit more about how the club works. Here's Paul Baker. Got in touch with you because obviously you have a sort of long history with the club, association with the club and with the chairman until reasonably recently. But I wanted to speak to you more specifically about your position as one of the owners and how that kind of works and your relationship with the club and the board. I think it's pretty useful to provide some background. I mean, part of the idea behind this podcast was to help explain to people the mechanics of the club, how things work. And I think there's often a confusion between the owners and the board. I guess it's fair to say, just as an explanation, and you could probably explain this better than me, but the club is owned by its shareholders. Some of them have very small numbers of shares. Some of them have much larger shares. Within that, we have what we refer to as the significant owners group or the ownership group, which would be the Robins Trust. But then there are three significantly larger shareholders: yourself, Simon Keswick, and the individual that we refer to as CTFC Investments. I wanted to sort of ask how your relationship with the other significant owners works and whether you see yourselves as the ownership group and sort of interact in that sense.
One of the beauties of the Cheltenham Town ownership model is that no one person has control of the football club. And I think when you look at the history of football clubs, often ownership is a big factor in either their success or indeed their demise. So I think it's very, very healthy to have a situation whereby you haven't got one person having outright control of the football club. And that's something that Colin Farmer, the late Colin Farmer, and myself are very, very keen to protect, and we saw that as a positive. Nevertheless, as you say, there are four, if you like, significant share owners, self, Simon, and Simon's been on the board as well as being an owner. He was on the board during my time as chairman for a short time, so he, you know, did have that experience, I suppose, of being at the whole face of running the club as well as being an owner. Charles is ultimately a fan who became involved again during my chairmanship. Purely, I received an out of the blue phone call from him at a very opportune time, and he became an investor and became a major shareholder. And so Simon, Charles and I, as you say, are fairly significant shareholders. I think it's true to say that even two of us might not have overall control. That might change now. It's a constantly evolving thing because some of the shareholders are investing all the time, putting additional money into the club of shares. So over the years, my shareholding has diminished in value as others have increased, and that's just the nature of the beast. So in terms of the relationship, when I was chairman, we had a very good relationship with Simon and indeed Charles. But they were very much owners in the background. They never really wanted to get involved in the decision-making of the club, running of the club. And apart from Simon's time as on the board, they're more than happy to be in the background. They'd like to be kept informed Well, Godfrey is particularly good at that. David Botsam too. And Charles is frequent attender at games. We went up together with David to the Shrewsbury game, for example. So that's an opportunity for us to chat for 2 or 3 hours about the club, about all aspects of the club, the future. So the relationship with Charles is really, really positive, and indeed Simon. Obviously, I'm very close to the club. I go to most games. I'm going to Exeter with David on Saturday. So I'm involved, but I'm involved not in a proactive, active way. I'm there if they need any things to bounce me off. But essentially, when I stood down, I wanted to just give them, I wanted to stand down and not be an interfering ex-chairman. And so really, and that's what's happened. You know, I purely am now a fan. And I'm quite pleased at the moment that I'm not the chairman. So I know what it can be like going through difficult times. It's great when it's going well, but of course, every single football club, it's not going well all the time. And there are ups
and downs. How do the owners and the board interact? You said that Paul Godfrey and David Bloxham sort of speak with each of the significant owners from time to time, but are there scheduled meetings? I mean, is that like a monthly thing or?
No, I think it's more informal than that. Paul will update them on the financial progress of the club, which is really what the owners are concerned about. We're concerned about is to ensure that Charlton Town is viable, sustainable, isn't suddenly going to find it calling upon the owners to bail it out. Because ultimately, I suppose that will be the responsibility of the owners. So the owners want to make sure that the club is well run, ultimately. The results are clearly important, but over and above that, is the club being well managed financially? Is it sustainable or is it not? And so financial data will be shared with them, with major shareholders, so that they are well kept in the loop. And from time to time, you know, there may be an approach to shareholders for some support for a particular project. For example, the recent project to put the solar panels on was helped with further investment from a shareholder. And of course, historically, shareholders have paid for some of the significant work we've seen at the stadium, including the Wadden Road end redevelopment, which was funded by shareholders. So shareholders had a significant input into the future position of the football as we see it now, and I don't see that changing. And I think they also had a bit of an input into the purchase of the training grounds. And I think when I look at some of this sort of talk, I think people seem to forget that the club has made what is perhaps the most significant investment ever, possibly, in buying the training ground, you know. And let's face it, that is the workplace of the football club. That's where all the training, everything else carries on. So to secure that by ownership was a really, really good thing to do. And not only that, it's a revenue generator, because obviously parts of the buildings down there are let out. And so that was a great investment. And you could argue, well, why don't we just spend that on players? But I think it's really important you're building solid foundations.
And with things like the purchase of the training ground, now that there's been that sort of outlay and the club have secured that, would the owners ever get involved in trying to encourage more revenue streams coming from something like that, an actual asset that the club has? Or is that still for the board and the owners would take a back seat?
Yeah, definitely with the board. It's like, we appoint a football manager, then we let the football manager manage the football team. As a board, when I was chair and Perak chair, we never get involved in the football side of the club. You know, and that wasn't to say that we weren't interested in the football side of the club, and we didn't have regular conversations with the manager, where the manager may have been, and we didn't go down to Caesars and chat with the coaches and things like that. We did. But ultimately, you know, we are there to manage the football club and not to be the manager.
So the board is appointed by the owners. People who own the business appoint the board to run the business on a day-to-day and to have the business's best interests at heart. How do you go about deciding on the composition of the board? And are the owners in a position to decide whether there is a sort of skills gap that they would want to bring someone else in?
No, I mean, and that could happen because obviously the owners are the owners. But the way it's being run under my watch before that and subsequently is that the board is very much in control of its membership. So if I look at the current board, I think they were all appointed under my chairmanship with the support of the board at the time. And you're absolutely right to say that skill sets was really, really important, because unlike most football clubs, the board at Cheltenham Town is very hands-on. And so if you look around the board, you have a skill set which covers most of the skill sets required to run a business, let alone a football club. Now, so you've got your legal side, you've got your commercial side, you've got Paul Godfrey, who's probably the best football secretary in the country. And then you've got John Murphy, who's got his football background. It's great that we've got Dave there to have an influence with supporters. Clive Gowing, I can't understate how important he has been. And what was great about that was that Clive was a fan, came through as a trust appointee. And I appointed him as the financial director, and I think probably one of the best appointments we've ever made. So if you look at that, we have got a really good cross-section. And I think the board now is of a good size, and they all get on, and they've got a really complementary skill set.
I understand that they take a much more sort of day-to-day involvement in the role than some board members across the country do. We often have just, you know, sort of over a pint after a match discussions about whether there's a different model and whether a CEO, for example, might be the way to go. Would that sort of structural thing ever come from the owners, or is that something that the board, again, in running the business, would make a decision on?
Well, it's very interesting. So when I was chairman, we did appoint a chief executive, as you may recall, and that was at the instigation or initiate or was put forward as an idea by one of the major shareholders at the time, who felt it was something that might well be beneficial to the football club. So we took that on board. I mean, obviously, you know, the board is always going to listen to the shareholders, to the owners. I mean, and it has to. And so we did. And after we did it, but it didn't last. It didn't really work for us. Not sure what the reasons were, whether it's the way Cheltenham Town is. It's a very people-focused organisation with lots and lots of people involved, lots of volunteers involved. And I think the beauty of that is you're not doing it out of duty. So when you're a paid employee, you're doing it because it's your job description, not because you love it. And I think that isn't to say that paid chief executives aren't going to be brilliant, but if I've got people who have got the skill set or want to do that because they love the club and they have the ability, then I'd actually much rather save a substantial salary on a chief executive who may actually also alienate some people, but also it may result in some people walking away because their skill sets are no longer required. So it was a good thing to try. It didn't work for us at the time. I don't think that was to do with personality. I think it was just to do with the makeup of the club. The board was very, very hands-on. We left Cheltenham Town. We're all, without exception, fans. We're not just anybody who just wants to be a director of a football club. We were all ultimately fans. And I think as long as we've got the skill set and the trust of the owners to get on with it, then that should happen. That doesn't mean to say we're not going to make some wrong decisions. And first to poke my hand up, you know, got it wrong on numerous occasions. But, you know, we are all human. But I think ultimately, if you look at the history of the club over the last 25 years or so, I would think no one could say that it hasn't progressed.
Regarding the future as well, we've obviously been on a very sort of strong trajectory over the past 25 years or so. The ground is obviously a bit of an issue in that the council owns the ground. We have a long-term lease on it.
Yeah.
And there are always discussions at the moment about very, very significant infrastructure investments. For example, building a new main stand. I just wonder like how the discussions between the owners go about that. It's very easy for fans on social media to say, come on, you know, stump up and let's just, you know, build a brand new main stand or whatever. Yeah. But you must talk about it. I just wonder how the plans for the future, so for the next 10 years, how you plan ahead for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Colin and I were sort of really, really keen to redevelop the whole stadium side by side. And obviously we've done three of the four sides, you could argue, and I think there's still future work to be done on the home end. It is a huge challenge because we're probably talking now about £10-12 million. Obviously, the council own the stadium, but no one would expect the local taxpayer to fund a new staff. The good news is that the former Cambridge prefab site is still undeveloped, and that's partly due to conversations between the borough council and the football club, because we want to try and ensure that whatever happens on that site doesn't preclude us redeveloping that side of the ground and potentially having a new access off the Prestbury Road, which would be far more suitable than the current access. So I think in the short term, it's about protecting future ability to build a new stand and protecting that access and working with the Borough Council. I'm hopeful we can do that. Having said that, we can't expect the council to sit on a piece of empty land forever. We need houses in Cheltenham. And so that site will be redeveloped for housing, but we just need to have build the Cheltenham Town future into that. In terms of when that stand's going to happen, it's a long, long way away. You know, all the shareholders, the significant shareholders, understand. We had a situation regarding we could have perhaps done the home end rather than buying the training ground. But doing the home end wouldn't really have generated an initial revenue stream, and it would perhaps been a marginal improvement. I think it's well known that the training ground costs in excess of £1 million. So £12 million is a huge amount. To make that happen, you have to find some significant partners who are willing to come on board and put a lot of money into it. What we really need is somebody who wants to build a gym or an office or a hotel or any other sort of commercial use which will help subsidize the building of the staff. So if you look at what many clubs have done, you know, then Leighton Orient, who worked with the National Health Service to redevelop their stand, Exeter with college. So that is the way forward. We did have thoughts about the university, but I don't think they need any accommodation. So it is still, let's be totally honest, this is not a short, medium-term. I suspect nothing would happen in the next 10 years, personally speaking, unless somebody comes along who has got access to that sort of funding. In planning terms, there are no issues in building a full-length stand, full height as well, to give us an extra floor of accommodation, because the overlooking is some way away. That's why we've got to be careful about what goes on Cape Ridge. And certainly in terms of the ownership, which of course is the council, they would be absolutely supportive of anything, which ultimately is going to improve their asset, as indeed the other stands did. So I think, you know, that is a while away. But it may well be that the club looks at an alternative, which is a more piecemeal approach, where it perhaps does one end and then gradually moves over. And that is perhaps going to be more achievable than complete demolition and rebuild. And I think that might be the way it has to go.
Because there's big discussions. I don't want to get stuck into the ground too much, but big discussions about Severn Trent access up in the home terrace and the problems that caused. But I believe that that's possibly more of a historic issue than might currently be the case. But
I don't think there's any issues. We did have some water supply issues, which you may be aware of, on the main stand, but they will be resolved now, as I understand. Yeah, so it is a tricky one. You know, I think we can be well pleased with what we've built to date, but this one is, it was always going to be the big challenge.
Back to the season-to-season interaction, maybe month-to-month interaction between the board and the owners. When it comes to budget setting, we always know the sort of board talk around. I'm sure obviously Clive takes a sort of leading role in that, and Paul Godfrey.
Yeah.
Is the budget run by the owners as the people who might have to step in? Do they play a role in budget setting, or is that something that's again left to the board?
Yeah, that's left to the board. I mean, that they would see the budget, but it'd be very, very unlikely. I've never known it that an owner would want to interfere. I think ultimately the owners either have trust in the board or they don't. So if you've got a trust in your board to manage the club sensibly and sustainably, then you let them get on with it. And, you know, the club, you know, apart from one year during my time where we did get into a mess, generally speaking, it hasn't been easy. But generally speaking, the club does okay. It does well because it's well managed. It would be the easiest thing in the world, you know, to put another £1 million into the playing budget. That would probably take up all the reserves of the club, all the liquidity of the club. If that doesn't work, the club goes. So, you know, you just have to be sensible. Set a playing budget which is sustainable, and that's what we do. I always remember a conversation I had with Mr. Majeski, who used to own Reading, and he said, the worst thing you can do as a chairman is appoint a football director who loves football. Well, we've appointed a football director who loves football, but actually he's also got a hell of a good financial head on him. And I know from working with him and since that he can be very, very difficult and very obstructive when the board want to spend money, and will be very challenging on those sorts of requests. you know, they if they want to spend more money, well, tell me where we're going to fund that money from. And that's where the role of Good Luck Paul Benz come in, because he's got a really good commercial head on him. And we do generate now a significant, far more than in my time, significant revenue on the commercial side of the club.
And as someone who's moved from being the chairman to sort of taking a step back and being an owner, is there anything that you personally miss from that side of things?
If I'm honest, no. So I think 21 years was a good innings. It took its toll on me at times. It took its toll on my family at times. Because not only is it a business, but it's very much a public domain business. And we should never forget that for thousands of people in our town, Cheltenham Football Club is one of the most important things in their lives. It's an emotional thing. It's a passionate thing. It's their Saturday thing and all of that. So, you know, we're not just dealing with a little business, which doesn't affect anybody. We are dealing with a substantial business, which affects a lot of people in the town and a lot of reputations are at stake when you're running that football club. So there's a lot of responsibility. And actually, no, I don't miss that responsibility and that worry. And, you know, and I feel for David and the board at the moment, because it is tricky. It is tough. No one wants to start the season off like we have. But you'll know from my time as chairman, we weren't quick to sack managers. We were criticized for that in many respects. And sometimes we may have got that right and sometimes we may have got that wrong. But there's no, you know, there's no guarantees with managers, as you know.
I think you've already alluded to how you would answer to this, but we're going through a particularly difficult period at the moment. I hope when this goes out, we'll be far away from that and there won't be any pressure. But would there ever be a point at which the owners would feel that the board just aren't pulling the trigger and it's critical that they would make a decision and sort of step in at that point?
Knowing the major shareholders as I do, I think that will be highly unlikely, because that would mean that they've just lost confidence in the board.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to challenge the board, then really you're either saying the board's not up to the job and we need to elect a new board, or you stick with it. But there's nothing wrong with the owners asking questions and making suggestions, you know, asking for justification of decisions. I think that's entirely reasonable. And I, you know, if, for example, we, God forbid, went for another six games, you know, with Anfield, heaven forbid, but I suspect if that did happen, the board would be proactive and it wouldn't need an intervention from the ownership.
Thank you to Paul Baker for his time, and thank you for listening. As I said at the start of the podcast, if you're not currently a member, you can go to robinstrust.org/join and sign up for either £10 a year to be a standard member, or if you'd like to support us further as an investor, from a minimum of £5 a month. The next episode, we'll be speaking to Fan Elected Director Dave Beasley about how he navigates the role between the fans, but really mostly about how the club board work. He's one of the full board members there. I think it's a very informative discussion, so that'll be coming up next month. And if you enjoyed listening to a podcast about Cheltenham Town, you should check out the Robins Report podcast. It comes out every week. Here's the host, Owen Knight, to tell you a little bit more about it.
Hello, my name's Owen and I'm the host of the Robins Report podcast. Catch us on your podcast platforms every Thursday or Friday as I dissect everything CTFC with guests every week. We're very proud to be CTFC's longest serving and only weekly podcast dedicated to the Robins. Hope to have you listening soon. Thanks for listening. And as always, up the town.
Thank you for listening. This has been an Unsound production for the Robins Trust.